Blog Talk Radio.
Yes, and hello, everybody, and welcome to the Kay Thompson Live Show. I am one of the co-hosts, known as Eric Payne, also known as the son of Kay Thompson. And this is Kay Thompson Live Show, 8 o'clock on Wednesday evening for the live broadcast. Sorry about the bumpy music. And we have the main host, the star of the show.
Kay Thompson, everybody, welcome to Kay Thompson Live. I'm going to be talking about, what we did, today. That's very close to my mouth, really. And we are going to be telling you about, Donald Payne Jr., Sr. We went to Washington, D.C. We visited the White House, which was quite an experience, and we're going to be telling you all about that. But the reason why we went is because of the documentary that was done on the former Congressman, Donald Payne Sr., and, of course, his son is in his place. Donald Payne Sr. Passed away several months ago, and several years ago, and his son is now in his place as a congressman, Donald Payne Jr. Quite an event. It was an emotional event, but the White House was really a very interesting place. I liked it. I liked it. I liked the whole atmosphere of it. Except for one thing, you think about all the people who, the different presidents and whatnot, and you can't help to think that you weren't really a part of that under Congressman Donald Payne, okay? And so we had a great time, and we went from one place to the other in the White House, and really very dramatically decorated, of course, during the holidays, and it was wonderful. Former President Obama's pictures, main photograph, portrait, was not up yet because it hadn't been finished.
He's not former yet.
He will be former in a couple of days, right?
Next month.
Next month? Really?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So, okay. But his picture was not up. And so to see all the rest of the presidents, and they were all white, so it's I was waiting to see the former president's picture there. There were some of the pictures were there. But anyway, it was quite an educational experience and in some ways an emotional experience. In some ways, when you start to think about the reality of what African Americans went through during the earlier times of this country, that's what puts a dent on it. We're waiting to hear from our other co-host, Wayne Gilman, who should be calling in very soon. And your ideas, your feelings about your visit to the White House, Eric.
Right. Let me just clarify, if I can. First, the screening was at the Capitol. We went down there for the screening, as my mother said, of my uncle's documentary about his life, Donald Payne Sr., and his life as a congressman and his untimely death due to the cancer a few years ago. And as a bonus or added feature, we were able to get tickets to visit the White House this morning. The screening was last night, and we were able to visit the White House this morning. The screening was actually on Capitol Hill at the Visitor Center, which is really a great center for anyone visiting Washington, tourists that want to come and see and learn about the Capitol and how things about our government and things like that. I would recommend it. It's been recently built, and the Capitol Dome itself has been restored and looks fantastic, all lit up at night. So the screening was at the Visitor Center, attended by Nancy Pelosi, the leader of the Democratic Party and the House of Representatives, the minority leader. And also as well as John Lewis, Nancy Pelosi spoke, as well as Congressman John Lewis, the legendary civil rights icon, as well as Congressman Emmanuel Cleaver out of Missouri, who was a very good friend of my uncle. They became very good friends, and who is a cousin of Eldridge Cleaver, wrote Soul on Ice. And I forget his other cousin named Tom O'Neill, I want to say. Both were Black Panthers.
Right.
And so it was really enlightening as these people spoke their experiences, as well as one of my uncle's staffers who traveled with him to Africa, Noel Lussain, and as well as Congressman Donald Payne Jr. My father also spoke about that, and this was sponsored by Congressman Donald Payne Jr., but it's also we wanted to raise awareness that we have the Donald Payne Senior Global Foundation to carry on the principles that he believed in, and peace and humanity and things like that. And so as a bonus, as we were talked about, we were able to get tickets to go visit the White House, and an unguided tour, it's called, which lasted about 45 minutes, where you walk through and see the Christmas decorations that they have up, and you look in a few of the various rooms that many of us see in news conferences and things like that, and news being made. And there was a display of the the Christmas cards on the wall of all the presidents, of the number of the presidents that you could see that they would send out Christmas cards every year. I think it was started by Roosevelt. I might be mistaken. And what happened is that each year a president was in office, they would send Christmas cards to people. You wanted to say, Mom.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you a question. You know, what was the way that you were able to determine by way of the Christmas cards, how many years? Talk about that for a minute. I suppose, yeah. Santa.
Right. The Christmas cards were done in the fashion where it was every year. The first family would send out Christmas cards. And so, obviously, if there were a president that served for 8 years, mm-hmm. obviously there were 8 Christmas cards. Mm-hmm. And if you only served one term, 4 Christmas cards. In the case of an individual, say, like Lyndon Johnson, there were 5 because he picked up the last year of President Kennedy's, and the 4 for his term as actual president when he ran and won. So, and also, unfortunately, JFK, there were only 2 Christmas cards on display. So it was really interesting. The great thing about going to our nation's capital that always strikes me is that you really see the history. You really feel the history of government and the development of our country. That Washington is a good chronicler, if that's a word, of things like that, where you can see the various buildings that were built. And in the Capitol, I was standing outside towards the end of the screening, since I've seen the movie quite a few times. There was a capstone, or a sandstone, that was one of the original cornerstones, and they had a little description that it was laid by workers, including enslaved African Americans who were slaves at the time, because as many people know, part of the White House and a large part of D.C. back in the George Washington days, though a lot of those structures and a lot of the labor, obviously, since slavery was in effect those years, so a lot of these places were built by slaves. And the Capitol Hill Center, the visitor center, has a lot of statues and things around there in honor of various Americans, including Native Americans, Hispanic Americans, and different people from various territories in the United States. You also see the narrative of what people wanted to tell about the U.S. as opposed to sometimes the real history of the U.S. You know, our history is not as grand as some of the movies and some of the people would mm-hmm. have us to believe. There's an ugly side, obviously, as we know. Yeah. And clearly, the ugly side is the result is getting ready to come to the White House real soon.
Mm-hmm.
So, but going to D.C. and in the White, you want to say about it?
I want to have a conversation with you about that because, you know, I expected to have more of an emotional feeling about the White House. you know, and I didn't have that. And I didn't have that because of the fact that I didn't feel like I was a real part of that because of the fact of the lack of, you know, African-American, how can I say, presence, you know, in the pictures and, you know, so forth and so on there. It was exists. It was almost to me, Eric, I don't know about you, but it's almost like you didn't exist except in a way of slavery and that kind of thing. So I didn't really get the feeling that I expected to have, and I hope to have one day because of the fact that also President Obama's pictures, there weren't a lot of them up. I know that his portrait is still being done, so that won't go up until he officially, you know, has, you know, takes office, right? The office of the presidency.
He's in office now. He's taking the office of the presidency.
Yeah.
He's leaving the presidency. So you're talking about the portraits, the painted portraits, was what you're referring to. His wasn't in there yet because he's still in office. There were pictures of him and his family when we first came in on the wall.
But not many.
Well, there weren't a lot of pictures, period.
Yeah.
Once you got past the initial thing, it was about the history. So I quite felt the opposite way because I felt that there are a lot of black people are there as well, and a lot of other Americans that jokingly, as we walked out, a lot of people were like, well, we're not going to be back here for 4 years, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so I felt the feeling like it was the last time to go in there and see, and it did feel that connection because the current president is black. So to visit the White House during the tenure of his administration, at least we got through the last year and visited the White House during the 10-year of the administration of the first African-American president. I ironically felt the opposite of how you felt. There wasn't a sense of sadness to me, and I'm sure probably maybe some of the other people I didn't ask, but judging from the kind of joking conversations that we had, that there was a sense of sadness that all of that was going to come to an end in the past 8 years and kind of the progress and really the inclusion of a lot of other Americans was coming to an end in this era of divisiveness and exclusion and almost kind of going back to some racist things. And if you look at some of the appointments to his administration and his cabinet that Donald Trump is making, is really attempting to dismantle all of the progress that we see President Obama is trying to make, most recently today with appointing a guy who is not a climate change believer, who's a denier. And President-elect Trump is trying to appoint this guy head of the Environmental Protection Agency. And this gentleman currently has a lawsuit against the Environmental Protection Agency. So I kind of felt, you know, this is, I wanted to be there and see it before Obama leaves the family.
Yeah. But however, you know, the specter, you know, the negative portion of it was the feeling that coming into this White House, which is supposed to be representative of all the people, you know, I'd never felt that it was representative of all the people. And I think if I went back, when I go back and see, you know, President Obama's picture there with all the glory that, you know, the other presidents have there, it may feel a lot different. However, of course, the information that this new person is coming in, who is the epitome of, you know, hatred about, you know, different people. I mean, it was a funny feeling, you know. You feel, well, this is the White House. This is the most important place on the face of the earth, you know. This is the United States of America, the most important place on the face of the earth. And yet we have somebody who it does not have the same belief that all people are people and they are to be treated equally. He doesn't really believe that. You know, so here you have a person coming into the White House who is just, it's a farce. So that, it was in the back of my head. I kept thinking, this person, now the whole feeling of even wanting to come back to it, you know, is really ruined. But I would love, I'm waiting to see it again, you know, to see President Obama's big picture, you know, hanging in the White House like all the others.
Right. Well, as I said, that's usually not,
yeah,
usually not there. They don't, as far as I know, maybe they did have the portraits, but,
it's
usually not done until those presidents leave office,
mm-hmm,
that they hang their picture. Okay. They don't hang their picture in their painted portrait in there while they're in office. So, you know, that's that. Also, too, I had a thought in my mind that just escaped. That was the kind of thing that I wanted to say, but it was really an And then for me, it's an inspiring, as I was saying, to just be in D.C. And understand the history, if you really know the real history of things, but also makes you kind of want to get involved in things. And you're able to really see, you know, when you walk and talk and see some of the people that are our representatives that are reflective of some of their constituents, it's really interesting. You know, you have the people who are firm Donald Trump supporters that support a whole constituency of Americans, a shrinking constituency, fortunately, of people that kind of think that one group of people is better than another group of people, or disliked the president just because of his ethnicity.
Mm-hmm.
And also, what is sad to me is that you have actually had African Americans who supported this gentleman, and some of the things that are going to be done, I think, will be harmful to African Americans and people of color. I mean, African Americans, we say this a lot on this show, but we can't deny the fact that black people, we catch a lot of hell in this country, and I don't think that with the new administration, perhaps say with these rash of gun violence shootings and police officer shootings of African American men, I don't think that they'll get the same amount of attention that they've gotten with an African American president, you know, and even the same amount of scrutiny, you know. Not all of them are hatred by police officers against black people, but certainly there's a pattern there in certain instances that needs to at least be paid attention to. And I think this new administration is not going to be sympathetic to those things. And to have individuals like a Ben Carson that's going to be head of HUD, when he said he didn't even feel qualified, but now all of a sudden he's feeling qualified, is unbelievable. You know, and these are people that supported this man, and now he's doing things that, you know, I often say, and I don't think I'm the first one to say that, I got this somewhere, when America has a cold, black people catch pneumonia. Our unemployment rate is twice that, the national average. You know, we have more of our population of people in jail, and we're only 13% roughly of the population. So, you know, these things that incrementally, you know, despite what Tavis Smiley and the professor said, that Obama wasn't doing enough for black people because he wasn't just the black president. But incrementally, I think that he was trying to make things that would even out the playing field for all people. And certainly the people who have been most treated most unfairly, trying to even things out. And in terms of certain infrastructure systems that are put in place, mm-hmm. in government,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And I was hoping to see more of that, but, you know, I should have realized that, you know, he's not pulled, you know, out of office. And so I guess that will come later, you know, his things that he's done, you know, for the country, which is an awful lot. You know, we had the first African-American president, the first African-American first lady. But at the same time, you know, you still have, you know, the ugly face of racism and all the bad things that come along with that. So it doesn't really make me feel good. I just wish that he would be there longer, or another African-American face or a Latino face or even an Indian face, you know, because after all, Indians are the first people in the country anyway. And certainly, you know, African people are the first people on the planet. So, you know, according to our, you know, African-American history, according to Dr. Ben, Dr. Van Sertimer, you know, Len Gunther, Dr. John Henry Clark, you know, all that. And you want to see more of that. And I just did not see me represented. You know, here, you're voting for these people, and, you know, it is lily white almost, okay, period. But that's not to, you know, to say that I didn't enjoy that trip. I did enjoy that trip, but that specter was always there, that no, you're not really included, even though, you know, our forefathers, our great grandfathers, you know, helped put this country together.
Yeah.
Okay, but we get no credit for it.
Certainly, I would say that you see more of it now that you had a black president,
yeah,
than before you had the black guy in office.
But what's happening is that so many people are against him. But some of our people, you know, some of them are, I don't know if they're not, it's just ill-informed, but the whole country should have supported, you know, Obama. Every single black person in this country should have supported this person.
Of course.
Okay? So, you know, it's still not up to where I, you know, feel that, you know, a lot of things have happened. I would suppose that when that picture goes up, you're going to say, I want to know what's going to happen. I'm going to wonder if Trump will somehow not cause something to happen to keep his picture even to be shown after, you know, the portrait is done and finished, you know. So I don't have that much faith in this, you know, president coming in. I have faith in him also anyway. But we're hoping that Wayne Gilman will call in, you know. So, you know, he will. I think he is, I think he was on a trip or something, but.
Okay, great. We'll talk to Wayne when he calls in. What I wanted to say about what's concerning to me about you raise a point about Trump not putting his portrait up or something like that. I don't think.
No,
that,
I
don't
think that he's talking about not putting.
Obama's.
Yeah,
but I don't think. I think part of the protocol for the White House is that you put a past president's pictures up. That just is a part of history. I agree with you that Donald Trump is doing things that no other, he doesn't pay attention to protocol or history or decorum, any of that. I don't think that will be up to him that decides that the previous president's picture hangs up there. He was on the Today Show this morning. Donald Trump was in a phone interview with Matt Lauer where he was really praising the president, talking about how he never really met him until they started talking since he got elected, and they have a good chemistry, and he respects him. He thinks that President Obama loves the country, tries to do the right thing by the country, even though he disagrees with him on a lot of stuff. But he really spoke in very positive terms about President Obama. And also, previously he's been on the phone with him a couple of times and getting his counsel. And even at press conference, he said he would look forward to getting his counsel about things. I am concerned with the dismantling of all of the things that Barack Obama put in place, because that's really what all of these appointments are suggesting. The majority of these appointments are suggesting that President Obama program are suggesting that the people that are going to be in place are going to dismantle. They have been against the things that President Obama has been trying to do throughout his administration. And so them being in the position to tear down everything that he's tried to do, that's really what concerns me, that they'll almost try to erase his legacy and things
Whereas sometimes Trump has, you know, used this platform, you know, to praise Obama. The next minute, you know, he's ostracizing him. You know, saying negative things like, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. We're not going to have this anymore. We're going to tear down the Obama something or other. Come on. You know, he's been on television saying what he's not going to do about Obama. And in the next breath, he's saying, oh, he admires him and so forth and so on. Will the real, right Donald Trump stand up? You know, because to this point, I don't trust him. And I think that the majority of, you know, black folks that I know don't trust him. So, you know, but anyway, no, Obama, do I trust? Yes, completely, you know. So therefore, you know, I just don't have that feeling of faith in Donald Trump. And I think the majority of the people, I can't say that either. Maybe they do. Maybe we don't have the country that we thought we had.
Well, I never thought we had the country we thought we had, or the country that was the PR campaign. I see it a different, because initially Trump was saying the things Drew was saying initially, but the most recent statement that he made as of this morning was that he was praising President Obama. So
you believe him?
I don't believe him. I don't believe. I take what he says with a grain of salt.
Yeah.
I'm just giving the chronological order, so for accuracy's sake, of what he said. He's been dissing him up until recently, up until this morning when he was praising him. Okay, so I just want us to be factual in the progression of
things. And in a couple of days, he'll be dissing
right,
him again.
In a couple of days, who knows? Now, also, too, I don't even know, I have a question as opposed to what caused him, you know, because Trump initially got on the whole radar screen in terms of him thinking about running for president when he started coming out with the birther issue about President Obama.
Exactly.
And my whole question is, why did all of a sudden he jumped on that bandwagon out of nowhere? And I'm wondering, Why did he choose to do that? Why did he choose to start speaking up and talking about Barack Obama as not a citizen? So it was really kind of bizarre because the president hadn't done anything to him.
Yeah.
Or hadn't, maybe he did do things that were hurting his business. Yeah, you want to say something?
Yeah.
I just want to finish. Let me finish
go
my
ahead,
thought.
Go
if
ahead,
I can.
Go ahead. All right.
So I don't understand why all of a sudden Donald Trump just jumped out there into the birther thing and really blew it up even more so. And I think he started getting traction out of it and started liking. He's the type of guy who likes that immediate gratification, standing in front of an audience and having them cheer for him. He likes that, obviously. That's why he did more of those than actual press conferences and what he did a number of debates. But that's what concerns me. It's like, why did you just choose to start getting on the birther issue? And there are a number of issues that Republicans had that were valid issues that they had in a contrast, or they didn't believe. They believed different things. So I don't understand why it was the birther issue, which was kind of couched in a certain amount of racism against Barack Obama, why Donald Trump decided to do that as opposed to coming out and saying his economic policy is this, his environmental policy is that, and I disagree with that. And so obviously that was the easiest way to get the most people to listen to him. But I guess what I'm saying is I don't know what the end result was, unless this was the end result to get to, because he did plan to run for president.
Let me clue you in, Eric, because of the fact that the birther issue, this white man would not choose to call anybody, to question anyone else's, any white person's birther issue. That's the bottom line. He accused Obama of not being born in the United States when he was born in the United States. Okay, he's a bona fide citizen, but he tried to ruin that. He, Trump. And then because of expediency and because of the fact that now he has got to recognize him as presidency, he started changing. But the birther issue should have told everybody that this man means no good, and he does not tell the truth. He has surrounded himself by people who are part of the Ku Klux Klan. Who's the guy who's right under him, the guy with that terrible hair, who doesn't even believe that to look as if he's part of a professional party or something? That doesn't even make sense. The birth issue was the determining factor with me with him. What is he talking about? Well, how dare you, challenge this man's birth certificate when all the other people in Congress, they would not have, if they had any questions about his birthright or where he was born, if they had, if they were really racist. But Trump did.
Okay. Let me clarify some things. First off, the birther issue was already out there. People were saying that. There were Tea Party people, and people were saying Donald Trump didn't bring that up initially. There are other people that brought that up.
But other people are running for president.
And at the time, Donald Trump wasn't running for president. Mm-hmm. He hadn't even announced running for president. So my point is that he definitely took it to the next level and gave it a larger scale platform when he talked about him, hire investigators to go to Hawaii and find out, which was all bogus. But he did not start that issue. Someone else started it. And like I said, it was couched in people who
But the other people were not, didn't have that kind of.
They didn't have the platform that
That's
Donald
right,
Trump had, is what you're saying.
Yeah, right.
He was not running. Donald Trump was not running. He had not. He started going up to the birther issue in the president's first term. Okay,
yeah.
So he was not talking about running for president or anything at that time. He just jumped on the issue, and all I'm saying is I don't know why he decided to jump on that issue like he did, unless this was his eventual plan to run for president. He had not announced, he had not expressed, over the years he expressed maybe one day I'll run for president, but he had not expressed any of those things. If you remember, he was actually supporting Mitt Romney when Mitt Romney was challenging Barack for Barack's second term.
So that should show you that he was thinking about the presidency, right?
Well, he was supportive of Mitt Romney who was running for president.
Mm-hmm.
He was trying to be a power player within the Republican Party. He started, trying to really kind of flex his muscles from my perspective. But he did not start the birther issue. He took the birther issue to the next level and made it blow up. But there are those people that were Tea Party types and other people, and we're talking about the Michelle Bachmann who's no longer there, people like that who were encouraging the Tea Party. And then it came, even when he was running against John McCain the first time. If you remember, one of John McCain's big moments in the election was that when a woman stood up at one of John McCain's events, and she was saying, you know, I don't like Obama, he's this, he's that, and he's a Muslim, and this and that. And John McCain stopped her very admirably and honorably, said, no, ma'am, no, he's an American, and he believes the same things as I do. We just disagree in how to get there. And that was one of the most heroic things, and John McCain should be ever respected, not only because he's a war hero, but those are the type of things that real heroes, real Americans stand up and try to make sure the narrative is that we're all one country. We just have differences of opinion on how to get to certain things. Now, there are members of both parties, I think more so the Republican Party, that believe those things along racial lines and racial perspectives. That's how that issue came, because that was an issue that some in the Republican Party tried to use to keep Barack Obama from getting elected. They tried to suggest that he wasn't acting, because that issue, that birther issue, was around when he first ran for office, if you remember. So Donald Trump was not in on that. He was not making any statements.
Listen, let me tell you something. I do not trust Donald Trump.
That's great.
I know a lot of women who do not trust him. Of all the nasty, disgusting things he said about women.
Right.
Okay, No. This is factual. This is factual. The things that he said about women, I don't trust him. And then the things that he said when he was on the bus talking to somebody with that disgusting way. Are you kidding? You know, and all the what he says about the sexual aspects, you know, parts of women.
Right.
You know, and he's going to be the president. What?
Right.
And then the birther issue is the least of it, but that was certainly a clue. Sure. Why would he, you know, just challenge this man's birthright? But he did. Okay? Obama was black, and that's the only reason why. Because Obama certainly had a qualification. Donald Trump will never have the kind of qualifications that Obama has.
Right.
And then Obama has the nerve to come along with a wonderful, bright woman also. Was also an attorney, the two attorneys, okay?
Right.
It's very hard to, you know, to wrap any kind of, you know, good feeling or even a mildly likable feeling about Donald Trump. I'm sorry, I don't trust him. I don't think he's going to be good for the country. And if he is, well, I'm wrong, and he'll be right, and that'll be wonderful. But I don't think so.
I agree with you 100%. All we're saying is that the birther issue was not started by him. He took it to the next level. So we just want to be factual in the historical context of things. And what we're really hoping and what we have to be vigilant about, I think that every American should be, is that to remember the accomplishments and to keep up the progress that was made by President Obama and the Democratic Party during the short time that he was able to be in power. You know, when Barack Obama won the presidency initially, the Democrats had control of the Senate and the House of Representatives, and he, in an attempt to reach across the aisle and include Republicans, so every American would be included, that's when they decided they wouldn't work with him at all and do everything. And I think that was a mistake to assume that they would have good intentions, that they would rise to the occasion and do it for the good of country as opposed to their own good, because we all know that Mitch McConnell said that he was – their objective on day one was to make sure that Barack Obama was not going to be a successful president. So hey, everybody, sorry about that. We had a little slight technical difficulty, but we're back on with you now, and we're in the middle of my mom and I, and obviously, we're in the middle of this debate about the accuracy about Donald Trump's birth involvement.
Yeah.
But I mean, like we said, we're in agreement that we don't really believe much that he says. If you just look at the fact that this guy goes on Twitter and says things that aren't exactly true, and moving over into like his use of things like the Twitter, right, where he can get his own message out. And he said even this morning on the show with Matt Lauer when he was complaining about, he tweeted about Saturday Night Live again, not being a good show. Matt Lauer said, why don't you just not watch it? Why do you keep watching it? And he said, well, it was a good show when I was on, and his dad is not having, like, why do you keep watching the show if you don't like it? So, and he was talking about also, why do you use Twitter? He said, and Trump's was saying, and I'm paraphrasing, of course, well, you know, it's a great way for me to get my message out and to get the truth out and this and that. And he is right that it has been a great – he's used it quite effectively. He's used Twitter quite effectively to achieve, to reach his audience. And I don't know why you're making a face. That's a fact. I'm not even paying attention.
I don't care. That's not presidential, though.
Here's the thing. You've got to understand. He's used Twitter very effectively to reach his supporters. And if you have 20 million Twitter followers and you're trying to, just like Barack Obama, if you've been paying attention, Barack Obama was the first president to come along and use the advent of social media.
Yep.
In the computer and digital age and all this stuff, Donald Trump has used Twitter very effectively to get his story out, his spin on things. And we're in an era where we have all these news channels, Fox, CNN, MSNBC, where these channels are developed and they talk to their base. These channels talk to people who agree with them. So it's a fact in the news now that people are listening to only the news that agrees that they agree with, only the news that they want to hear. So what happens is that there's not any kind of understanding of the other side's point of view. And it is a fact. You can laugh, chuckle, whatever you want, and that would suggest that maybe you don't really understand how Twitter is used. It's a fact that he used Twitter extremely effectively to get his message out to his base and to mobilize his base. And so in doing that, he's able to put out these false statements. He's able to perpetuate these lies. So when he says the news media are liars, and I've got to put my own message out, it's kind of ridiculous to say the news is lying. So he goes there to put his own message out.
And
that's
his own message about women. He does put his own message out about women. Okay. So and you don't hear a lot of the media defending that kind of thing. You know, but in other words, defending women. Okay, so I'm telling you, this is really a joke. He uses Twitter. Is that presidential? He uses Twitter and he says some nasty things and he reacts like some little kid. You know, is that presidential? Is that what the president's office stands for? It's a joke. I mean, he's sitting there playing games just like a little kid. You know? No, so a lot of people don't understand Twitter and a lot about the computer. So what? But still, you want somebody to... If he's the head of a country, and especially a country as powerful as the United States, the strongest country in the world, you know, and then he's playing games, you know, how much of this does he understand? And then look at the people that he surrounds himself with. You know, he's got a racist who says the KKK, you know, and he's proud of it, this guy. Anyway, I have another thing I want to talk about when you get finished with Twitter Trump.
Yeah. My mom really doesn't understand the internet, everybody. I know she does. She's going to say you do.
I do. Okay. And, you know, we're having a good discussion right now.
Okay, I know you do, but not really. And what we're saying is that effectively Donald Trump has used Twitter. But my real point is that he's used that to misinform people and spread his lies.
Yeah.
And so, but he's done that quite effectively that anybody could tell you. And that is perhaps is where news is moving to. Everybody's talking about this current story about fake news, you know, when they put up these fake news stories. I was just on the news the other night about how a lot of these websites, if you go on the Internet right now and you go on AOL or go on any site, you'll find in the crawl on the side of the things. And everybody, if you're avid Internet users, you know what I'm talking about. You'll see these headlines that say these crazy things, you know, almost like the tabloid papers that you see in the checkout line in the grocery store when you go, and they got the Star and the Globe and these things that have these sensational headlines. You know, woman gives birth to an alien and things like that. And also, so now that has evolved into the digital age where you'll go to these websites and they'll say the Pope. I saw one headline said the Pope comes out to support Donald Trump. That's fake news. These are fake, fictitious news sites that people put together to get these, to get eyes. And basically, this person who was being interviewed, who claimed he voted for Hillary, but put these fake news stories about Donald Trump this, Donald Trump that. And people who are illiterate or not the most intelligent people see these things, read these things, and actually believe them. And there was a story that the guy who was getting ready to beheaded the NSA, I think McMullen or whatever his name is, he retweeted a fake news story about this Pizzagate. If you heard the other day about the gentleman, the guy who went to Washington, D.C. and shot up this pizza parlor, Ping Pong Pizza, which I think was the name of the store, because in this fake news story, they said that this place was a front for a child sex ring or child trafficking ring or something like that, and they perpetuated this fake story that the Clintons were involved in human trafficking of children. And so it was perpetuated, and so this person, who clearly was not too intelligent or not all there, went, said he was investigating and shot up the place. It was in the news just 2 days ago. So that's why I'm talking about Twitter and fake news. It's a very serious thing that people are putting these fake news stories up, and you have a lot of these people, the base, Trump's base supporters, who only get in their own room and listen to people who agree with them and watch the shows that agree with them, and they believe this stuff. And to have, and I agree with you, you can't trust the Trumps, and to have someone that's going to be in his cabinet retweet a fake news story is crazy. But that's what the effectiveness of the internet and things like Twitter are able to. He's able. The argument is that he's able to get around the legitimate news agencies and news reporting sources and talk directly to his base and tell them whatever he wants to tell them, every single lie that he wants to tell them.
I don't know how to answer that question.
The point is that we're talking about how effectively he's used that, and the danger, you're right, the scary, dangerous thing is about it is that he's lying about this, and these idiots are listening to him. And so that's the whole point of the discussion.
You're making my point.
That's the point that's been made in the news for the past 3 days.
Yeah.
That's why I'm telling you this.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not your point. It's the point that's been out in the news since the shooting happened 2 days ago. So we're talking about Trump doing that and talking about him being this. You have something you want to talk about right there. Why don't you talk about that?
That's right. Exactly what I'm going to be talking about right now, because this is presidential. This is a letter from cousin of mine who received a letter from the president, from the President Obama. And he says, "Dear," you know, my cousin's name, I'm not going to mention her name, but I thank her for sharing this letter with me. It says, "Thank you for the letter you sent me about your family." Now, this is from, you know, the President Obama, to my cousin, who just happens to be, who was the president of the New Jersey State NAACP. It says, "Thank you for the letter you sent me about your family. I was struck by the pictures and articles you shared, and it's clear you're carrying on your family's remarkable legacy through your own service to your community and our country. Your uncle and grandfather fought on different sides of the Atlantic for the same noble cause, to extend the reach of liberty's light. Despite being denied rights by the country they risked their lives to defend, they overcame forces of oppression and division and were both part of an unbroken line of patriots dedicated to upholding the ideals for which they knew to be true and just. It seems like your grandfather and uncle were remarkable men, both in and out of uniform, and I am humbled by their legacy of service. Please tell your sister I said hello, and I wish you the very, very best." So that is from Obama to my cousin, Sally Carroll. Sally Carroll is, was the head of the NAACP in New Jersey. She was one of the first black police persons, in New Jersey. So, and her sister wrote this letter to let the president of the United States of America know our family, her family, my family too, we did in favor of the country. And then she says to me, my cousin says to me, "Here's a copy of a letter from our POTUS. Since I received this, I'm so proud. And I'm so proud of you, Nia, for letting me know about this and writing me this note, because now I can share it with our listeners here on K-Top the Lot." She goes on to say, "What's more, my mom's side of the family, Sally and I, and we are the last surviving immediate grandparents of our orphan extended our extended extended ancestry. I'm sorry. The family story is now in the Library of Congress, you know, being processed. I worked hard to make this happen, you know, and I'm very happy that she shared this with me, because I'm proud of her for, you know, following through with, you know, letting those facts be known. So, you know, really, they fought on different sides of the Atlantic, as she said. But the point is that she got this letter to the president, President Barack Obama, and he returned the courtesy of writing her this letter. So I really think that for her to share this with me was really absolutely wonderful. So to get back to now, the reason why we went to the White House today, not today, yesterday, is to go to, you know, go to the White House to, you know, see it and to see what was going on and, you know, just be part of it, part of history. And I can't wait until Obama's picture is finished and we'll hang in the White House with the other pictures that were of such noble, honest people. So, and I want to let you know why we were in Washington in the first place. It was because of the fact that there was a documentary that the family did on my brother-in-law, Dr. Congressman Donald Payne Sr., who passed, and his son is now in his place, Donald Payne Jr. And Donald Payne Sr. was quite a congressman in the state of New Jersey here. He was the founder of the Global Foundation, which was involved with in continuing his legacy. He was continuing the work of New Jersey's first African-American United States congressman who used his global influence, and he traveled extensively throughout Africa to get things going, and not to get things going, but to work with the African people in Africa, our people. And also his global influence, he used his global influence to work toward eradicating health and education disparities, promoting peace and youth development, and uplifting the human condition worldwide. And also, you know, Donald Payne was the one who got me my first teaching job in Passaic, New Jersey. And he was really a wonderful teacher. Absolutely. I mean, he never raised his voice at any of the children. They were crazy about him. And he had a way about him of speaking low. He never raised his voice. He was amazed by everyone. He appreciated, you know, people in general. He was, you know, he devoted his life to closing, say, the achievement gap in education. Congressman Payne and John Lewis, Congressman John Lewis, you know, with high school students participating. Here's a picture of them participating in the Gear Up program at New Jersey Institute of Technology. And the work of Congressman Donald Payne Sr. is, so they say, he's not finished or pushed up because his son, Donald Payne Jr., is now in his place. So what we do want people, the name of the foundation, by the way, of Donald Payne Sr. is the Global Foundation. Let me get this right. The Global Foundation. It's continuing the legacy of Donald Payne, and he was a gentle warrior, an advocate for human rights. He served 12 terms, by the way, in the United States as a representative from the 10th District of New Jersey. I remember that quite well. We were all involved in, the political, work. He worked tirelessly for all people of his guard state, and yet he never wavered from his concern and for others. He was really wonderful. And the documentary was absolutely, fantastic. Yeah. So we congratulate, who was it, what's his name down there at the cable television, Fernando? Yeah. I forget his name down there. I think for a minute. Great job.
Right. It was the foundation was founded by my father, William D. Payne, in honor of Donald M. Payne. I don't know if you made that clarification. And obviously Donald Payne Sr. was passed away long before the foundation was founded, and this is to continue his principles and things like that in terms of bringing global peace and things like that. When my uncle passed, they had in the House of Representatives in the Congress, they had you know, they had a tribute to him. And a great many people, you know, they go down to the Congress and they have people, those of you that have seen them, the news clips, or if you watch C-SPAN and you watch the Congress or the Senate, you know, they go to the area where they make their speeches, particularly in Congress. They have to go down to what they call the well, which is where the Speaker of the House sits, and they have a microphone on either side, one for the Republicans and one for the Democrats, and they step to the podium at the mic, and they make their statements about whatever. They also have mics closer to the seats as well. But when they step to the well, I believe it's called the well, it's when they're addressing the entire body there, whoever's in the room, actually. And so when they had this, at the end of the business day, they had a tribute to shortly after Martha passed away. And a great number of his colleagues, Republican and Democrat alike, a great number of Republicans stood up to pay honor to him because they had known him as not being someone who's combative, being someone who's very soft-spoken and really tried to bridge divides and really try to talk to people on a one-to-one basis and really try to, you know, get to talk to people as people. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that you hope happens not only in the Congress, but in our society. People get to know each other. That's the whole thing about, I suppose, was the whole attempted experiment of integration, to have people living with each other, to see that your preconceived notions about this group of people or different groups of people are preconceived notions, and you have to judge people on an individual basis. And the reason I'm talking about this is because I was talking to one of Don Payne Jr.'s staff members, and they were talking about these trips. And they call them CODELs, mm-hmm. and I think it's congressional delegation trips that will be sponsored by the government to go to various countries to deal with various issues and such. But these trips were bipartisan, so you had Republicans and Democrats traveling together overseas or whatever, and actually being able to spend time together is what I'm trying to say. Yeah. Time away from work, just human time, getting to know people, you know, fathers, grandparents, whatever. So you're getting to know each other on a human level, a very human level. And in that, the staff member was saying to me that he felt, and I feel too, that once you get to know people on a one-to-one basis, you get past the ideology of I'm a Republican and you're a Democrat. You get to know someone as a person. And there's a congressman from here in New Jersey, Congressman Leonard Lance, who was attended the event last night, who was a Republican, but who worked very closely with Donald Payne Sr., is very supportive of Donald Payne Jr. in the Congress. He represents New Jersey, another section of New Jersey. But he also was a state assemblyman, and he served with my father, William D. Payne, in the New Jersey State Assembly. And he was one of the people who supported my father's legislation, the Amistad legislation, to include African American history in the core curriculum that's taught in schools, and not just restricting it to Black History Month. And so here's a white Republican gentleman, I would assume from a very great family, mannered family, but he was very supportive of my father and a very nice gentleman. And he's someone, you know, one of those people that I'm talking about that does not, just because someone is a Democrat or has some different beliefs, does not just write them off. And I think what happened when they stopped doing them, this particular staff was saying, when they stopped doing these trips together where there were bipartisan trips of Democrats and Republicans traveling together, is when some of that animosity started to develop, like a us against them mentality. And that's pretty unfortunate, because we need to have more of seeing that the Democrats and Republicans are coming together to try to do things that affect all of us as Americans, and not just put the interests of the wealthy over the poor, or the Black over the white, or white over the Black, or whoever. You know, we all live in this country together. We should try to help the broadest cross section of people. And so it's encouraging when you have a gentleman like Congressman Leonard Lance, and there are a number of others that are along those lines. That you know, when it comes down to human needs, and I noticed when my cousin was going through his challenges with his diabetes and things like that, there were Republicans that I would see on the Hill when I would visit and walk with my cousin as he did his job. And there were Republicans that expressed concern about him and asked how he was doing and wished him well and hoped that he did better. So, you know, there is hope for that. Let's hope that we can really kind of come together in a real, genuine manner, not just a superficial manner.
You know, you're talking about coming together. Yes, yes, I agree with that completely. But a lot of people are not involved in the political process. You know, a lot of people really don't even involve, you know, think that, you know, the politicians are doing any good for them in their particular communities. And I'm urging people to get involved in the political process, you know, because if you have an issue, maybe you can help solve that issue for your city, for your council, for your ward, for your neighborhood, you know, for your state, for presidency even. So, you know, we've got to be a little bit more involved, you know, in what's going on, you know, in our world, especially if one it affects you. So, but and the way to do that is to become involved in the political process. And you get out and you find out, you know, the different issues and find out if people are being fair to you, if they're covering your particular needs and even talking about what you need to hear with your from your councilman, from your board person, you know. And you get out to vote. That's the one way that we can really, you know, make a difference. And so the political process is very important. You know, as a matter of fact, there was a time when I was thinking about, you know, going to law school and running, and then running for office. Got that out of the way real fast when I started the studies. I don't like Trump.
Okay.
Bottom line, I like Barack Obama, and I like people who are fair and who are just and who are kind and prayerful. So there, bingo. I'm Kate Thompson.
All right, we're just coming back right down to the end of the show. I want to thank people for doing it. Please remember that you can catch us every Wednesday evening, 8 to 9 p.m.
Yep.
on the Blog Talk Radio Network, blogtalkradio.com/KTompsonLive, with myself, Eric Payne, and our other co-host, Wayne Gilman, who I think had some other pressing issues that he had to deal with tonight. Also, I would encourage, you know, to visit the White House, visit Washington, Republican, Democrat, there'll be things that you'll see inspire you about the development of our country. And so, you know, you could be this staunch Republican down there, and you got a president that you can go down there and feel good about going to his White House and checking it out. I went to the State of the Union 2 years ago and ended up sitting next to the woman, Susan Harris, who was denying gay couples marriage licenses against the law. That was actually the law in the state that she was working in. And, you know, we exchanged like a hello. I at the very least was able to say hello to the lady and exchange minimal pleasantries, even though some people were giving her the evil eye there. I was not, and I thought it was very interesting that she was even at the State of the Union. However, the person of like was trying to do it because of some sort of a stunt. So thanks for listening. My name is Eric Payne. You are a lady.
I'm Kay Thompson. Join us every Wednesday, 8 to 9 p.m. on Kay Thompson Live, everyone.
Thanks for listening. See you next week. Oh.